The New England Patriots, like...
It's a whole new era for the Pats, and it all starts with the NFL Draft. This is where we break it all down. The Sports Hub NFL Draft Show with Bob Soucy. Brought to you by Massachusetts Health Connector and Cross Insurance. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And good morning, everyone. We welcome you inside our satellite studio here on Boston South Shore, apart from our Dorchester studios at the Beasley Media Group. Bob Soucy with you on another NFL Draft Preview Show. And you heard the voice of Roger Goodell, a little bit of reaction from the crowd of the Patriots in the number 23rd slot from a couple of drafts ago. But, of course, there will be no crowd for Goodell in the basement of his home in the virtual draft coming up this Thursday. And for now, the Patriots once again are scheduled to pick 23rd, though that very well could change by Thursday night, if not beforehand, as, of course, we have now reached the week of the draft. And as Bill Belichick told us last week during his teleconference, this week approached, there was a greater likelihood that we might see some moves being made once people around the league had a better idea of where they stood and where all the players ranked on their boards. That might be the time when the calls are being placed. Of course, they've got to work through a lot of the technical aspects of the draft coming up, a mock draft in store for league executives around the NFL coming up in the next couple of days. But Thursday night, it all begins with the first round. And again, we'll see if the Patriots indeed pick at 23, move up or move down with a big gap between that first pick and their next selection, which comes in the third round. And as we welcome you in, and of course, and we note the circumstances of the draft being held virtually this year at remote sites in the homes of coaches and GMs around the NFL, it's because of this unprecedented time that we're dealing with. And again, for a third straight week on the show, we begin with our best wishes for you and yours. Hopefully you're listening with your loved ones sheltered in place, as I am right now. Mine are next door in the living room, if not the kitchen, here in the house. And if you're not, if you're out and about, if you have to be working today, of course, whatever your role is, as critical as it is to all of us, we wish you well. And if you're going through some really hard times, whether it's economically, emotionally, mentally, please know, in the very least, thoughts are with you. And in a few minutes, we're going to talk with someone who's been doing a great deal in the last few days with some help from others and try to raise a lot of money to do a lot of good in these parts. So we're going to talk with Mike Giardi of the NFL Network about that particular role he's taken up in recent weeks and beyond, of course, his duties as an NFL Network reporter before we get into it. His thoughts about Bill Belichick last week and the teleconference that the head coach of the Patriots and general manager, de facto GM, held with media in these parts. Now, remember last year before the draft, Bill more or less foreshadowed the Patriots' top two picks in his pre-draft press conference, which was held at that time in the media workroom at Gillette Stadium, when Belichick talked about the increasing presence of big wide receivers in the league and therefore the increasing need to have big defensive backs to cover them. And lo and behold, the Patriots took N'Keal Harry, big wide receiver, in the first round and then traded up to select Jawan Williams, big defensive back, in the second round. We'll come next weekend when all the Pats picks are in. Will we again re-rack Bill's pre-draft presser, his teleconference, and realize, aha, he told us so? And again, we're going to talk about that and much more with Mike from the NFL Network, his key takeaways from Belichick's teleconference, what was said and what was not said as Bill spoke to us for the first time since last January's postseason postscript presser. Later, we'll also hear from Evan Lazar, who's listed the prospects in this year's draft class on his big board that he believes are among the most likely candidates to become Patriots based on their skills plus New England's schemes. But before we invite both of them in, I want to revisit a couple of moves this week the Patriots made involving players previously on the roster. One of them, a no-brainer. They gave a second-round tender to defensive lineman Adam Butler, a player they've really developed fabulously since he came out of Vanderbilt as an undrafted free agent. He signed his RFA tender this week for $3.26 million, coming off six sacks a year ago. A player who developed first under Brendan Daly and continued to progress last year under position coach Brett Bielema. High motor, a lot of intelligence, certainly proved himself a very valuable piece of the Patriots' defense. And I look back at the defensive line in 2019, and we know that the Patriots more or less shifted in scheme a bit. They went lighter up front, more of a 34 than a 43. They had very reliable play from not only Butler, but Lawrence Guy in particular. And Danny Shelton had a very resurgent season, his second as a Patriot, and it certainly helped to earn him a nice deal this offseason as a free agent with the Detroit Lions. And the Patriots have brought in Bo Allen, but when you look back at last year, a couple of guys they were counting on as either a returning player or an offseason acquisition in Dietrich Wise Jr. and Michael Bennett didn't necessarily have the kind of seasons that were anticipated from them. In the case of Bennett, of course, he was traded in the midst of the season once his playing time was curtailed dramatically. And it's going to be interesting to see in this week's draft if the Patriots maybe shift back to a previous philosophy defensively and maybe stock up a bit more up front. They do have Byron Cowart. They've got Bo Allen, who they acquired in the offseason this year as a free agent and NFL veteran to go with Cowart, a player they drafted and started to develop last year. But I think that's an area that we're going to keep an eye on, and we'll take a look at it specifically today as well. But when we look at the lines for the Patriots, I want to address one other move they made this week primarily and get to the offensive line. Now, the Patriots on Thursday had Jermaine Illuminor sign his restricted free agent tender, 1 year, $2.13 million. Illuminor was a player, primarily an interior player, but a guy with some versatility, guard tackle. The Patriots had acquired shortly before the season from the Baltimore Ravens in 2019. Bit of a disappointment for the Ravens. Of course, they switched schemes entirely with Lamar Jackson taking over a quarterback with an offensive line play. So maybe he didn't fit because of those reasons. But he came into New England, one of three players in a wave of transactions between the end of the preseason and the start of the regular season to address some concerns on the offensive line for the Patriots. They brought in, as you may recall, not only Illuminor, but Corey Cunningham, primarily a tackle, who played a little bit as well. In the case of Illuminor, just 29 offensive snaps last year. They also acquired Russell Bodine, an NFL veteran center who never played for the Pats. All those guys were brought in once David Andrews went down for the season because of the blood clots in his lungs. And after Jared Valdir and Brian Schwenke, two veterans who figured to be on the opening day roster, both retired. In the case of Valdir, he never played for the Patriots. He was a pickup in the prior offseason as a veteran tackle. So during the training camp weeks, we watched Dan Skipper try to win a spot on the roster, which he could not do. Once the season began, of course, the Patriots had acquired those three players I had mentioned, and Bodine, by the time the season began, had already been let go by the team. Marshall Newhouse was brought in, a veteran tackle off the street, and the Patriots wound up carrying an extra offensive lineman on their roster all season long. Part of the 53 men were nine offensive linemen during the course of 2019. And then after the year, they have lost Ted Karras, a guard who became their center when David Andrews was lost to injury. He was signed by the Dolphins. We know that Joe Tooney has been franchise tagged by the Pats, but with a hefty price and reportedly still not close to a contract extension. So it raises a lot of questions about the week forthcoming. In addition to still some concerns, one would have to think regarding the health of David Andrews, who has said that, you know, he's ready to go, but still, taking into account what he experienced last year, you know, that has to be a question for the Patriots. And so while we've generally focused on positions outside of the offensive line, and in particular the offensive interior thus far on the draft preview show, I think when you look back to more or less an area that had been so stable in 2018 and became anything but in 2019, even with players drafted from a year ago like Yelda Froholt and Yadni Kajust right now on the Patriots roster, I wouldn't be surprised if the Pats draft an offensive lineman early, and I'm not just talking about a tackle. One name that has been mentioned a lot, though he may not be available when the Pats pick at 23, is the center from Michigan, Cesar Ruiz. We'll talk a bit about him with Evan Lazar in our third segment today. But again, based on, you know, who goes in front of that 23rd spot, assuming the Patriots pick at 23rd, or even if they trade back into the second round. Despite all the talk about tight ends, despite all the talk about players on the defensive side of the ball, in particular in the front seven, I wouldn't be surprised from this vantage point if when you look back at some of the trouble experienced in 2019 on the offensive line, if they look to that area, we'll also talk, by the way, with Mike Girardi about potential moves they could make, and one of them just might involve one of those offensive linemen I just mentioned. Again, a player signed to the franchise tag in Joe Tooney. We'll come back with Mike right after we take this timeout on the NFL Draft Preview here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The 98.5 The Sports Hub, the game is on. Tune in for classic matchups from the past. Celtics.
And the Bruins.
Today beginning at 1, it's the Patriots' first game on the Sports Hub.
Tom Brady, you are Tom Tooney.
Plus the Brady to Sean Watson shootout. The Sports Hub classic replays, where the game is still on. 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is where the experts break it all down. The Sports Hub NFL Draft Show with Bob Soucy. Brought to you by Massachusetts Health Connector and Cross Insurance. Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
We have a lot of draft picks. Some of them are kind of more in a certain area, and we have a little bit of void there in the second round. Although, you know, that player, Sanu, filled a need for us. So, you know, that's okay. But in terms of just the draft planning and strategy and so forth, yeah, that'll really, I think, start to pick up here in the next, you know, probably around the weekend or maybe after the weekend, 3 days leading up to the draft.
All right, that was head coach Bill Belichick on his teleconference call with the media on Monday. Part of that call as well, Mike Girardi from the NFL Network, who takes time to join us now on our Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mike, good morning. Hopefully you and yours are doing well today. And I want to commend you at the outset for what you've been doing the last few days, raising a lot of money for a lot of great causes. And I'm going to give you the floor for a minute or so to tell us about what you're doing and how people can help.
Well, we were inspired by Chris Cotillo from MassLive, who started to take some of his memorabilia, and he put it up on Twitter and just said, hey, we're donating to various causes. This is a charity. You know, go. We'll run this till 2. We'll run this till 3. And he's generated a ton of money. I think he's somewhere around $27,000. Good friend of mine, Chris Sargent, who helps run the Audi dealership in Nashua, New Hampshire. He is also a big memorabilia guy. He saw that and he said, Mike, your platform, my stuff, some of your stuff, let's do this. And so, the last 3 days, I think we're up over $11,000. And just the response from everyone has been phenomenal, and helping out the Western Mass Food Bank and Worcester County Food Bank and the Cam Neely Foundation, Robin Ride for Kids, Family Aid Boston. You know, those have been our five. We got a nice donation from a fella, 300 game winners in baseball, a ball. We donated that to Autism Speaks. Thank you, Bob, for that. So we've really it's been pretty gratifying, to say the least, to be able to do something like this and help out when clearly a lot of people need some help right now.
Yeah, it's awesome, and you can follow Mike, if you don't already, at Mike Girardi, G-I-A-R-D-I, and there is a constant stream of sports memorabilia on his timeline, and again, all for worthwhile causes. And Mike, it's part of what you do. It's not your full-time job. This is in addition to what you do for the NFL Network, and I'm curious, how is your role going to differ this year because of the circumstances of the draft with the NFL Network now combining with ESPN covering Thursday night?
Yeah, unfortunately, it lessens what we'll be doing. We currently, our three major studios, New York, New Jersey, and Culver City, California, right outside of Los Angeles, they're all still closed per, you know, the government order, state's order. So we've had to get very creative in how we do stuff. I've done a lot of tapings, and then you send the tapings in through a transfer system, and then we're putting those on the NFL.com, and we've also done some where they're able to edit them and put them on some of the shows that are back up and running for us. But it's definitely a little different. I would have been camped out at Gillette. I'm sure you would have been as well. And now I'll be sitting, you know, in my Well, I'm finally creating an office space. I've been in my living room, but I'm finally creating an office space downstairs. So I'll be sitting there. I'm sure we'll have to do some tapings and things like that. But it's, yeah, it's definitely not the same. It won't be the same sort of the production that we've normally had.
Yeah, last year we were at Gillette Stadium before the draft to hear from Bill Belichick in his pre-draft press conference, and he talked about big receivers and big defensive backs, more or less foreshadowing the picks of N'Keal Harry and Juwan Williams in the first two rounds. Did you take away anything from last week's teleconference with Bill that gives you insight into what he's thinking Thursday night, Friday, and Saturday?
Yeah, I don't know that I necessarily took a player-specific specific position type thing, but I do think the clip that you played coming in, you know, the fact that they don't have a pick between 23 and 87, there's too many good players in this draft. And I know every year, especially in Foxborough, we get that, well, you know, from 15 to 55, from 15 to 50, from 15 to 60, they're all about the same. You know, it's just where our teams have them, you know, fitting in their board, but all the players are basically the same. I think this year that window is bigger. And I think to not have a pick for whatever 63, 64 selections in this draft, with some of the needs you have, is it's not going to fly. So somehow, some way, whether that's trading back, whether that's combining your first and a third, or first and a third and a fourth, whatever, I think they're going to figure out a way to close that gap and make a selection in that second round for sure.
Do you still think it's a possibility that they could also include a player currently on their roster as part of their draft day trades? And I'm thinking specifically of a guy like Joe Tooney.
Yeah, I completely see him as a potential move, either on draft on day one of the draft or maybe even prior to sometime this week. Because look, they're about $1 million under the cap, so they don't even have enough money to sign all their draft picks. And look, there's plenty of time to do all this stuff. I don't want to get too hung up on it, but they are really, really tight. And Joe's, you know, counting for $14.9 million against the cap. And I don't think that they were lying when they said they wanted to do something with him long term. I just think now the baseline for the deal is $14.98 million. And I think we all realize that Joe, if he wasn't going to reset the market for guards, he was going to come awfully close. Great time to be a free agent, right? So, you know, they not only do they want to do something with him long term, I think they also wanted to keep him away from a couple places. I think the Jets were very interested. I think the Dolphins were very interested. So you get an opportunity to, at least if you can't do it, you can control him into where you move him. So, I would be, if they don't have something or they don't feel like they have momentum towards the long term deal, which I don't believe that they do have momentum right now, then I could absolutely see him being moved.
You know, Mike, I want to get into the draft and some of your thoughts on it, because I've been watching the video pieces that you've posted from your living room before the office is set up. But your colleague from NFL Network, Daniel Jeremiah, said that O.J. Howard, the tight end reportedly available from Tampa Bay, is as good, if not better, than any tight end in this year's draft class. And we know that's an area that really is a glaring weakness on the Patriots roster as currently constituted. Howard could be available. Trey Burton is now available. Do you see one of those two as a better answer than the draft? Because, in particular, it's a thin draft class by all accounts.
Yeah, I think OJ, from a sheer talent standpoint, certainly qualifies as better than any tight end in this draft. And it's kind of an unfortunate year to need at that position, because I think there are good players at that position, but I don't know that there's anyone that really changes the way you go about doing your business. So Howard is an intriguing guy. I know this past year Arians' offense is not really tight end heavy, but it hasn't happened for him in Tampa. And whether that's the coaching or whether there's something in the kid that we just didn't see in the pre-draft process, I don't know. And I'm sure if the Patriots are genuinely interested, they're doing the most homework that they can do. And obviously they have a good connection, at least in Alabama, because that's where he came from, and Bill and Nick Saban's relationship is pretty good. But that's an interesting name. Burton obviously just costs money, you know, whereas Howard's going to cost, you know, picks, a pick or picks to acquire. Trey Burton's one of those guys. He's set free. I know he's coming off the hip surgery, so you're going to have to make sure you get the medicals, which obviously I think we're finding out is very difficult to do in this period of time that we're in with the virus. So, it's whether they want to give up assets, of which, again, they really, for some of the needs they have and for that gap that they have in the draft, they don't have as much to play with as usual. So, maybe this is a situation where they say, look, unless we can get Howard for a three, and I think teams would line up to try to trade for Howard with a three, and then create some sort of bidding war, then maybe the best option is Burton, because it's just cash, and you're bringing him in with Matt and Ryan. And the interesting thing is, in talking to people in Foxborough, they like those guys more than the outside world likes those guys. And I know Matt had a lot of injury issues last year. I think you saw some glimpses in the summer that maybe there is something there, something more that can be unearthed. And obviously it's a quarterback that they had for the last 20 years. Tom is, especially as he got older, very much would freeze guys out, quite frankly. And I mean, he said it in his 2-hour interview with Howard Stern. And I think some of those guys got frozen out, and maybe, the way they look at it in Foxborough is, hey, whoever the next guy doesn't have the luxury of freezing these guys out, because they don't have the resume. They're going to have to throw to the guy who's open. And if that's Ryan Izzo or Matt Lacoste, then that's what they're going to have to do.
Well, Mike, you asked Bill about the decision by Tom to leave, and whether Bill, in coming to his conclusion about Tom, wanted to keep the quarterback, and he wasn't going to go there in the teleconference last Monday, but you set the stage for some follow-ups. And Bill was asked about the way the offense, more or less the way the offense is going to be designed and conceived and built moving forward, if there might be openness to change. And based on what he said, also based on what you know from talking to people around Foxborough, because you're piped in as well as anybody down there, what do you anticipate looking ahead to the future without Tom Brady, and how might it affect where they go in this year's draft, particularly at the skill positions?
Well, I think there's been a desire over the last, 5 or 6 years, or at least there's been intrigue with the more mobile quarterbacks that we're seeing now. And I don't foresee a turning over into the Lamar Jackson Baltimore Ravens offense, because Lamar is incredibly special with the ball in his hands and was the most electrifying guy with the ball in his hands coming out of the draft a couple of years ago, and is still maturing as a passer. Or maybe he has matured as a passer and this is what he's going to be, but with the skills that he has with his legs, he can change things. I think, Josh is, they've had an eye on that for a long time, at least the ability to find someone that can move a little bit better. But obviously, you're not moving on from the greatest quarterback of all time in the period in which he was playing at such a high level. I do think there'll be some change. I don't think it'll be dramatic. What I do think is, and it's something that Belichick said and that I really seized upon and I've hammered it home, they adapt to personnel that they have. They don't try to shoehorn guys into spots that don't work. So I think the same holds true for the quarterback. If Jared Stidham is a guy, well, we know he's a younger guy. He's a little bit more mobile. He can use his legs. They'll move the pocket. I think that's obvious. They'll do some things to utilize his athleticism and maybe help make the game in terms of deciphering what defenses are doing a little bit easier, because again, he doesn't have obviously the experience of the last guy. And I think that's been in part the genius of what they do. They don't just say, this is what, this isn't the Steelers, this is the defense we play. Okay, but this defense doesn't work against a team that you have to beat every year in the Patriots. Yeah, well, this is the defense we play. It took them until like 2 or 3 years ago to start changing their defense after 15 years of the same thing. And I think Bill has always, you're 3-4, you're 4-3, 2 years ago, they suddenly become a power running football team late in the year. When everybody else is spreading it and throwing it all over the yard, they say, well, we're not throwing it as well as we would like. And Gronk's not the same guy right now. So how do we best utilize what we have? Well, right now we can run the ball downhill. So let's go. And so I think that has been Josh and Bill and guys on the defense always being able to morph into what best suits their talents. And I think that's part of the genius and part of the reason why, for 20 years, you're in the AFC Championship games and Super Bowls and winning Super Bowls.
Yeah, so if they like Matt LaCosse and Ryan Izzo better than most of us or many of us on the outside perceive the value of those players, and it's an offense that is often very versatile, as you mentioned. They can change, reinvent what they do even during the course of the season, like 2 years ago. Then maybe, you know, a piece from the tight end position like a Harrison Bryant, who I know you liked out of Florida Atlantic as a potential mid to late round pick, is more suitable to the Pats this year because he's kind of like a Kyle Juszczyk type, according to a lot of folks who study this, an H-back fullback type. I know they have Dan Vitale and James Devlin coming off a serious injury is a bit of a question mark, I think, at this stage. But maybe it makes more sense rather than to go out and draft a inline tight end that Bryant, as you pointed out in one of your pieces, would be more attractive to them.
Yeah, I mean, interesting guy because he's, you know, you can, as you mentioned, you can move him across the formation and he doesn't seem to have issues wherever you put him, whether he is in line or whether he's flexed out. You know, use him in a variety of spots and he found ways to get open. I think the other thing about him that I like, a few years ago, remember the Tim Wright acquisition, and Tim Wright did okay here for the one season. And, you know, he was you're trying to find the Aaron Hernandez piece to be alongside Gronk, and obviously not nearly the same talent as Hernandez, but they got some production out of him. I look at Bryant as someone who can be moved, but also, unlike Wright, you can put him in line, and he's a competent blocker, and I think, to me, he's going to be one of those guys who's going to get better because he's, you know, now he's devoted full time to football. He's going to be into that strength and conditioning program, and you know, maybe he don't reap the rewards of his blocking in year one, but you know, year two, year three, when he puts on a little bit more muscle and improves his technique, then he is someone that you can depend on in that regard, and maybe the projection now grows because the player grows, you know, in the professional game. So I really do like him a lot. I think he is pretty smooth.
Speaking of growing, what players have grown on you in your studies of this year's draft class in the final minute or two here that, you know, you look for the Patriots, if they're available, to nab, whether it's on the offensive side or the defensive side, your favorites?
Yeah, I think I spent a lot of time looking at quarterbacks, obviously. I know that my colleague Ian Rappaport said the Patriots will use a premium pick on a quarterback. I premium pick to me is first round, second round. I don't see them using a first-round pick. You know, I do believe if I had to guess, I would say they're moving back from 23 to help acquire more picks. But I've looked a lot at, you know, Jake Fromm, who's someone, you know, everybody's sort of connected to and didn't have a great year. And I think Belichick talked about, you know, some guys in the quarterback class whose tape from a couple years ago don't marry up to this past year. And he's certainly one of those guys that didn't have enough talent around him. I wonder if he can drive the ball in the elements. That's not something he had to do very often. And I look at a couple other guys in that class, Anthony Gordon from Washington State and James Morgan from Florida International. And those guys to me are, I think there's a lot of upside there. I know people are kind of fixating on Love and where he falls in the first round and could he fall to the Patriots. I like those two guys. Because one of the things that jumps out to me about them is decision-making. And I think if you're slow at processing in the college level, you're slow at processing in the NFL level, and that means you're never going to be what people think you might be. And I think there are a couple guys in that first-round conversation that still are slow at processing. I don't think those guys are slow at processing. Now, do they have all the other stuff that goes with it? You know, we'll have to see. I mean, you know, Washington State's offense is certainly under, you know, their former coach Mike Leach is a little bit unique in that regard. So I like those guys. And I look at receiver too, KJ Hill from Ohio State. I love him. Doesn't test off the numbers. He's probably a third rounder, but he's a slot guy. He led them. He's their all-time leading receiver. And as someone said to me, and I think I've seen it now written in scouting reports too, he shows his numbers to the quarterback. And I think if you have a young quarterback, someone who's making that transition as the first-year starter in your system, having someone like that who makes himself available all the time is a pretty important thing. So I like him a lot. I like Edwards from South Carolina, who's been hurt a ton. But I think if he's healthy, he's ready to play right now.
Mike, I appreciate it. Looking forward to more memorabilia on your Twitter timeline, of course, raising money for food banks and other charitable organizations around New England. Looking forward to your reports coming up all week long. Thanks so much for your time.
Bob, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, Mike Girardi with us. We'll continue with Evan Lazar right after this.
The Patriots are on the clock.
With the 23rd pick.
As the Sports Hub NFL Draft Show continues.
Local dealers hope that you'll join in helping our medical professionals by following the advice of the Center for Disease Control and your local health authorities. Honda Power Equipment dealers are open, are here to help you, and have changed the way they do business to help protect our communities. If your home or business are in need of power equipment or service, reach out to your local Honda Power Equipment dealer.
Sports Hub NFL Draft Show with Bob Sosi. Brought to you by Massachusetts Health Connector and Cross Insurance on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
There are always a variety of things you have to try to put together and look at, but certainly there's a lot of interesting players, guys that have really good arms, can really throw the ball, and there's some very athletic players and players that have won a lot of games and, you know, have shown their competitiveness and instinctiveness. Interesting group, probably one that has decent depth to it.
Welcome back to our NFL Draft Preview Show. Bill Belichick and his teleconference with New England media last Monday, talking about the quarterback class deep at that position, according to the Patriots head coach and many others who follow this draft closely, like Evan Lazar, our next guest, awaiting us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Evan, thanks so much for your time. And it's a draft class that is not only deep in terms of the number of quarterbacks, maybe not so much first-round quarterbacks, but across the board. And you're a guy that has studied every position in this draft class, like you always do annually. What other positions for you stand out in this year's class?
That's a good question. I think that along the wide receivers and along the offensive line would be the two spots that I would look at. I mean, wide receiver, everybody knows that at this point, is maybe 15 to 20 players deep in the top 100, which is just insane to think about, which means that there's going to be a lot of guys that spill over into the fourth and fifth rounds that normal years would probably go much higher. So there's going to be tremendous value there. I also think this is one of the best offensive tackle groups I've seen in a while. I mean, we're talking about five true first round picks at offensive tackle and maybe more if some of those other guys slip in there as well. So a really good tackle draft, a really good wide receiver draft, and I'll agree with the head coach and say it's a pretty good quarterback one too.
Well, let me ask you about the quarterbacks, and I want to transition to some other positions and really spend most of the time in our conversation on defense. But you had Justin Herbert number five on your board of draft prospects, candidates that you feel kind of fit the profile for the Patriots. Why Herbert, and is there a possibility in your mind that the Patriots could be in position to take that quarterback? Ian Rappaport, as Mike Girardi just told us, says the Patriots are prepared to use a premium pick on a quarterback this year.
Well, I think the fun part about this draft, Bob, is that because everybody's kind of been locked inside for the past 30 days, there's not a ton of groupthink right now about all these picks. So the top 10 picks or so of this draft, which we normally would have locked down pretty much at this point, is a complete wild, wild west out there. I mean, we have no idea what these teams are really thinking. So with that in mind, there's a chance that Justin Herbert or Jordan Love or even Tua Tagovailoa could fall to a position where the Patriots might be interested in either trading up or just sitting back and letting one of these fall in their lap, you know, kind of like the Packers did with Aaron Rodgers over a decade ago, where you just kind of wait and all of a sudden, you know, you have a franchise quarterback sitting right there for you on the board. The reason why I picked Herbert over some of the other options, first of all, I don't think Tua is going to be there. So I took him off my kind of ratings list there because of the fact that he's not going to be available. But with Herbert, I think the biggest thing is that you see the ability to really beat man coverage with what we call leverage throws. So you're not necessarily reading 1-2-3 across the entire field, a full field progression as you would call it, but you're looking for matchups, you're hunting man coverage situations, and you're looking for situations where your receiver is out leveraging the corner that's going up against him or the defensive back that's going up against him. And the Patriots are very, very good as an offensive staff of kind of scheming up ways pre-snap to figure out those matchups and to see those leverage points. I think that's where Herbert can really succeed with his arm talent and with his ability to throw the ball and manipulate man coverage. I think they would really like that, and they can kind of work with some of the other things that are the deficiencies in this game.
It also seems as though his stock rose considerably during the Senior Bowl week. A lot of concern about the nature of the Oregon offense. But he answered, it seems, a lot of questions with the way he practiced and played down in Mobile as well. You mentioned the offensive line. Belichick said this week, regardless of who the quarterback is, you got to start by protecting the quarterback. And we know the Pats had a lot of issues on the offensive line last year. Your favorite tackle, at least on your big board, is Josh Jones, lining up perhaps as a player who'd be available for the Patriots. What about on the interior, too? Do you think that's an area the Pats could go in this draft?
I do, because the Patriots typically, Bob, as we both know, look at the draft as something that they need to replace guys 2 to 3 years down the road, potentially, and maybe not this exact season, the 2020 season, but you look at David Andrews, you look at Joe Tooney. These are two guys that you don't know how much longer they're going to be here. So on the interior, you know, Cesar Ruiz is my top guy from Michigan, but I think there's a lot of really good depth there. Jonah Jackson from Ohio State, Matt Hennessy from Temple is a really good center prospect. And I think you can just go right on down the line with a lot of these guys at that interior spot that maybe not be starters right away when they get here, but will be starters next season or the season after that, and they can kind of take over for some of these guys. I know that a lot of Patriots fans are kind of clamoring of what the team thinks of Yelda Froholt still. I think Froholt will still be in the mix, but there's a really good amount of potential starting future starters here on that interior that I think the Patriots might be interested in.
And Evan, there's a possibility, of course, that they could move Joe Tooney, which means a lot of starts and a lot of snaps gone from the left guard position. David Andrews' health, still despite some positive reports this offseason, has to be a concern. And, of course, Ted Karras, a guy who gave them a lot of snaps and starts last year at center, is now with the Miami Dolphins. On the other side of the ball, and I know you mentioned wide receiver as a deep position. Maybe we'll circle back to that if time allows. But I haven't spent too much time on the show talking defense in the previous 2 weeks, and I definitely want to get to that particular area. The defensive line, Daniel Jeremiah, in his conference call on NFL Network this week, slated A.J. Epenesa out of Iowa, and in his mind, a quintessential Patriots-type player. How good is he? How much of a fit would he be? And who else do you like up front for the Pats?
Epenesa fits exactly like DJ said, just like an absolute glove in this Patriots defense. He is a 3-4 end, maybe a 4-3 end if you want to be scheme versatile. You can certainly kick him inside on passing downs, late on, you know, big passing down, second down and long, third down, that type of situation. Have him rush on a guard, have him rush on a center, do things like that. But I think what really stands out about Epenesa is his upper body strength and his length and his ability to really post up and lock out against blockers and two gap at the point of attack. And that's something that if you watch his tape, this is a sturdy, sturdy, stout defensive lineman. You know, this is a guy that nobody moves off the ball very far. And he has the ability to really just sit there and anchor and post up on a guy and just wait for the ball carrier, which is exactly what the Patriots are going to want. I think that he's probably a little light for their strong side position. They usually like to go with a guy like a Lawrence Guy at that spot, at that five technique, or really a 4-eye right in that B gap. But on the other side, on the weak side, really Epenesa fits that spot perfectly and would be kind of the 2 years removed, but the Trey Flowers replacement that they didn't have last year, they would get an Epenesa as a pass rusher. You know, he's really good with his hands. He's not the biggest first step guy. He's not an explosive guy off the ball that's going to turn the tight corner, but he's certainly a type of guy that's going to win some hand fighting and some hand technician type situations where he's able to use his hands, use his upper body power to create separation and then bend the edge, you know, soften the edge with a nice long arm or a nice jab and then really turn the corner at that point. He also really likes the two-hand swipe move to keep himself clean coming around the corner. And there's obviously the stuff on the interior, you know, the snatch moves, the arm overs, that kind of stuff that he's really good at. And I think that that's sort of the type of player that they look at. And they say, okay, he's not going to rush past the quarterback. We know how much Bill Belichick hates that when you run past the quarterback. And, you know, you get 10 yards behind the ball. He's going to be a guy that's going to keep level, that's going to stay kind of in his lane, be a very gap discipline and against the run, and be a very difficult player to move against the run as well.
Rob Ninkovich says that's the worst place to be, past the quarterback, as a longtime and very knowledgeable Patriot. There's a different kind of player. You mentioned Epenesa. resembling Trey Flowers. There's another guy high on your list who's more comparable to Chandler Jones out of Penn State.
Yeah, Yetar Gross-Matos is one of the funner studies that I had in this draft, that's for sure. This is a guy that really gets off the ball with a lot of explosiveness and also has a lot of quickness on the inside, too, for 6'6", 265. He can really be quick and move his feet very, very well. He's very raw, which reminds me of Chandler, obviously coming out of Syracuse, the guy that really was kind of just a piece of clay that they needed to mold. And I would say Gross-Matos is similar, although he had great production at Penn State. I mean, we're talking over the last 2 years, 17.5 sacks and 34.5 tackles for loss. So not a guy that isn't lighting up the stat sheet yet. So that bodes well for his NFL success. It bodes well for his NFL success that he's doing that against good offensive lines in that conference and not really doing it with great hand technique or great pad level or really great anything sort of from a technical standpoint. So he's doing it on raw athleticism alone. You get him in here, you refine some of those things. You can teach him his punch timing, his punch accuracy, that type of stuff. Then I think he can really unlock a really great skill set that's certainly more athletic and kind of just more twitchy than what you're going to get with AJ Epenesa, and he has that versatility still to line up everywhere. The one thing that you have to, you know, throw out there with Gross-Matos is there was a hazing lawsuit out there against him and some upperclassmen at Penn State with an underclassman, and I think that that's still ongoing, and you're going to have to figure out that, you know, that's one of those things that you kind of have to do your homework off the field to figure out what's going on exactly there. But in terms of the on-field fit, I love the fact that he can pretty much rush from any alignment that they want him to, and he has that a little bit more of a higher ceiling, I would say, than Epenesa just because of the athletic ability.
Evan, want to combine offense and defense with this next group of players, because last week I spent a lot of time with Mike Rodak from Alabama.com talking about the Crimson Tide class in this year's draft class. LSU sent 16 players to the combine as the national champion. The Tigers loaded on both sides of the ball, and three of your top four on your big board of 50 come from the Tigers, two of them on the defensive side. Tell us about those players.
Yeah, I mean, the Tigers, it's like every single time I wrote another person up on my big board, it was an LSU Tiger. You know, it's crazy how many of those guys are there. Well, Clavon Chaisson is probably my favorite out of this group. I love Patrick Queen, too, and I'll get to him in a second. But Chaisson, the reason why I love him so much is that he fits the Patriots bill sort of on and off the field. He's a team captain. He wore that number 18 jersey for LSU, which signifies LSU leadership and toughness. And it's a jersey going back 15, 20 years now that they pass out to kind of the quintessential leader in the locker room. So Chaisson wore it. Lloyd Cushenberry, their center, they kind of shared it, but they obviously can't have a center wearing number 18. So he just wore a patch on his jersey during games with the number 18 on it. But both of those guys kind of split responsibilities of the jersey, which is pretty cool. And then Chaisson, really, as a player, he's total opposite to Epenesa. He's an edge rusher, two-point stance kind of guy, stand-up edge rusher that has a ton of explosiveness. I mean, rocket ships in his shoes coming off the ball. A guy that can really turn the corner, tight corner, and chase and get after the ball and get after the quarterback. He's got a couple of different pass rush moves that he uses, but his speed rush is definitely his kind of signature, and then he works off of that with long arms and speed to power and things like that, and then a very, very good spin move as well. And he's extremely quick and agile against the run to slip blocks, and he has enough power. I mean, he's not necessarily the Patriots' quintessential edge center that's going to just stand up guys and stuff like that, but he has enough power, I think, to stack and be able to hold up at the point of attack. But really, I think the biggest thing for me with Chaisson is that when you look at across the landscape of the league, we know Bill Belichick is doing this, and you see Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson and Josh Allen in your division, and maybe even another mobile quarterback in like a Tua or Justin Herbert joining the division as well in Miami. You start to think about the fact that you need some athletic guys at that edge position to contain those mobile quarterbacks and run around with them as well. And I think that that's certainly something that Chaisson and his teammate Patrick Queen, who is a late bloomer. Queen really only has 1 year of great production because he was behind a lot of really good players at that linebacker spot in LSU during his career. So he got a late start, but at the same time, you know, listening to things that their coaching staff said at Orgeron, said that at one point in time they were thinking about Queen transferring because he just wasn't good enough to play for LSU. And the guy really just worked his tail off and got into a position where he could start. And then he had probably the best season of any defensive player on that team last year. The quickest processor I have seen off the ball in a couple of years, a guy that every single time a guard pulls, this guy's in the hole before the guard even gets there because of how quickly he can see these things and how fast his brain matches his feet. You know, he's an extremely quick player. But that being said, he's only 229 pounds, so he's essentially a jacked-up safety. So I don't know if the Patriots are necessarily going to go for that. We know they don't typically go for that with their off-ball guys, or usually in like the Juwan Bentley, Dante Hightower types. But at the same time, the mental processing and the ability to click in the blocking schemes that Queen shows really makes up for the fact that he's not 255 pounds. So I think the Patriots could go either way. Another guy that he can really run and chase as well. So if they're thinking about containing those mobile quarterbacks that I brought up, he's a guy that can certainly spy and be able to go sideline to sideline with those guys, a guy that ran a 4.5 in the 40-yard dash, which is good for a safety, let alone a linebacker.
Well, they drafted Elandon Roberts at a similar size without the similar skill set coming out of Houston. He's gone now by way of free agency. So they have had lighter players in that position, at least one of them, in the not too long ago past, as recently as last year. And maybe Queen gives them somebody with more versatility and athleticism who really could be an every down player.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's certainly the type of guy that Patriots fans have been clamoring for at that spot, a guy that can cover. And he can drop into space and play zone coverage. He can play man coverage. I think you could probably line him up over the slot or over a tight end and have him guard those guys, and he'd be perfectly fine with that. He can blitz from off the ball. He's not necessarily a guy that you're going to put on the line of scrimmage at outside linebacker too often and rush the passer, but if you want him to run a blitz up the middle or something like that, then he's certainly effective at doing that as well. But it's really the click and close against the run, the ability to see the blocking scheme. I mean, there are plays on tape, Bob, where he's in this hole before the running back even gets the ball because he knows exactly what kind of blocking scheme the team is running. So great preparation player, great film study player, great eyes for the game, and just overall instincts for where the ball is.
Evan, I know you could talk about this draft class all day long, and I could listen all day long, but I got to go for now. I really appreciate your time, as always.
No problem, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
All right, I'll wrap things up right after this on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Visit jazbeat.com and do it today.
All right, back with our final thoughts on this week's edition of the NFL Draft Preview Show, and they are non-draft-related thoughts. Of course, the Patriots will pick on Thursday night in the first round if they stay in that 23rd spot or move up and don't move down and out of the first round. But they have a couple of other items on the agenda this week that are going to be unveiled that I think are of great interest and maybe as much interest for some of us as the player they're going to pick first in this year's draft. Among those items, new uniforms, or at least a reportedly subtle change to the uniform, which disappoints me a bit because I'm kind of hoping for a throwback to the Pat Patriot era and those red uniforms with the white helmets. And I'm kind of holding out hope that it's not going to be as Mark Bertrand so greatly desires, the throwbacks to the royal blues of the early days of Drew Bledsoe and, of course, my broadcast partner, Scott Zolak, in particular with those italic slanted numbers and the various shades of vertical blue striping. But you know, if that's the look, then no less, we won't root for the Patriots any less. But again, new uniforms, at least subtle changes to the uniforms unveiled this week, plus the Hall of Fame finalists for the Patriots Hall of Fame will be announced. Mike Vrabel, Richard Seymour, certainly I think two of the three guys that will be on that list. They have been finalists in the past. Richard, of course, someone who's so close to getting into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. This year, Wes Welker, Logan Mankins, among other considerations. And I put Welker on my ballot this year with the thought of putting Mankins there, of course, on the future, because both belong, all four of those players belong in the Patriots Hall of Fame. I've had Bill Parcells on my ballot in the past. Admittedly, I did not have him on this year's ballot. But there seems to be a lot of momentum, as Mike Reese wrote about this morning in his quick hit thoughts, for Parcells' consideration and candidacy, of course, for the Patriots Hall of Fame. It would be well-deserved again, from my point of view, although I wasn't here in New England, of course, when Bill and the Patriots parted ways after the Super Bowl loss to the Packers, and I can certainly understand why many in these parts very strongly believe that he should not be in the Patriots Hall of Fame. But again, it's a strong list of candidates, not only with those five, but many others, including some that are lesser known to the younger generations of Patriot fans, like Fred Marion and Julius Adams. But it's going to be very interesting to see who the third person is on that list of Hall of Fame finalists for the Patriots up for fan voting, I think, with Vrabel and Seymour all but foregone conclusions at this point to return to the finalists' ballot. New uniforms, Hall of Fame finalists coming up this week before the Patriots pick first in the draft on Thursday, if not on Friday, should they trade back. Coming up next here on the Sports Hub, it's Christian Arcan, and he has your top of the hour sports headlines with my apologies shortly after the top of the hour. Before I turn it over to Christian, though, my thanks to Mike Giardi and Evan Lazar and our producer Tracy Clemens. Thanks so much for joining us this week, everybody. Stay well, stay safe. Take care. Bye-bye.